Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up. Don't be so rough, but you got to be tough when you do your stuff.
Hey! Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. I love that song. I truly do. That is Perk Badger called Do Your Stuff. Welcome to Congress College. My name is Elizabeth Crist, and you are tuned in to the only radio show, weekly radio show, twice weekly radio show, where we talk about Congress. That's right, Congress College airs twice weekly on the Monday show when Congress is in session. That's typically 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Monday is when we outline the week, and that means we talk about what will actually be coming up in the Senate of the United States and then in the House of Representatives. And then on the Friday show, which of course is the show you're listening to right now, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we recap the week in Congress and we talk about what actually got done. Did the Senate do what it said it was going to do? How about the House of Representatives? Did it do what it said it was going to do? Did they do the bills they said they were going to do? You know, I do this show twice weekly so that you can answer this really, really simple question. Were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because think about it. We have the greatest representative government in the world, bar none. I say this all the time, but it doesn't work so good if we don't know what they're doing, if we can't keep track and keep them accountable. And you got to know what they're doing. You got to know what they're up to keep them accountable. Anyway, that's my view. I also do the show so you can familiarize yourself with the free website, gradegov.com. And of course, gradegov.com lets you grade a member of Congress. How about you're a member of Congress? You want to give him or her an A, or maybe you want to give them a C, or maybe you want to give them an F. Maybe you want to grade somebody you've just learned about. Maybe you want to grade Nancy Pelosi. And, of course, when I'm talking grades, I'm talking about the A, B, C, D, or F, just like the grades we all got in school. You figure out who you want to grade, then you figure out what grade you want to give them, and then the site will auto-generate a part of a letter all the way up to, Dear Senator Rubio, I gave you a B today, and you have to finish the because of whatever, whatever. Of course, I'm using that as an example. Senator Rubio is my senator, and anyway, I always seem to use him. I think he's a great, great, great guy. Okay. I'm about done with the housekeeping. I want to say hey to everybody in the chat room. Bob, thanks for your little thumbs up on my voice. I'm trying so many different ways to figure out what is the smoothest because, you know, there's a couple of radio stations that have asked to go ahead and simulcast this, but they won't unless the quality is a certain quality. So anyway, I'm working on that. Bob, thanks a lot. And stay warm. I guess Connecticut got slammed again with the white stuff. You know, I was in D.C. this week. Did a radio show on Wednesday, Lou in the Morning. Lou in the Morning is a radio show up in the panhandle of Florida. And I told Lou, you know what? There's all sorts of white stuff everywhere, and it ain't sand. You know, us Floridians, we're used to the sand. So anyway, stay warm, Bob, and thanks for the thumbs up. All right, let's get started. The Senate and the House worked this week. The Senate was dealing with the energy bill. Remember, we talked about the energy bill last Friday. It was the energy bill that is supposed to modernize some of our energy programs. And Senator Stabenow and Senator Peters, both Democratic senators, the two senators from Michigan, offered an amendment that would require the federal government to fix the Flint, Michigan water issues. Remember, they've got lead in their pipes. Basically, the amendment they started out with was that the federal government would pay $40 million and Flint, Michigan would pay $40 million. Well, that ended up not working out. They couldn't get an agreement, so they stopped the bill. They're back to the drawing board. They hope to get it worked out. In the meantime, I hope the rhetoric, because earlier in the week, the rhetoric was really racial. You know, you heard things like, well, if Flint, Michigan had a bunch of white people in it, they wouldn't have contaminated the water. Things like that, which is just deplorable. But anyway, let's hope that they work it out, because they'll be in next week for that. And hopefully they'll end up doing, they have a bill teed up. It's enforcement of sanctions against North Korea, and there's going to be 7 hours of that. That'll be coming up Wednesday. Okay, let's flip over to the House of Representatives. What did they do? Well, they fell short of overriding the president's veto on Obamacare. You know what I think is interesting? You know, I said I got to be in D.C. last week. I got to watch the caucus election returns with the two biggest political junkies in the world, my parents. It was sweet. It was nice. But I was telling Mom that, you know, the House on Tuesday was going to try to override the president's veto on Obamacare, probably won't make it. They'll probably come woefully short. And then after it happened, it was never mentioned anywhere. No mention anywhere. No mention anywhere. Not in Fox News. Nowhere. Well, it did fall short. It fell 40 votes short of overriding the president's veto. He vetoed the bill. And that means that Obamacare is alive and well and doing damage to you and I. You know, I have a personal story I just learned about from my doctor that comes from Obamacare. It's a policy that they've put in place to regulate a doctor, which makes no sense. I'm not going to share my personal stuff here right now, but believe it or not, sad but true, Obamacare is alive and well. Is this good or bad for the Democrats? Well, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, they raised over $627,000 since December. Remember, the House passed this bill at the beginning of December. The Senate passed it in December. The House passed it the 1st of January. They have been rocking and rolling when it comes to fundraising off the Affordable Care repeal bill. One of the fundraising solicitations said, and I'm quoting, "For the first time in history, an Obamacare repeal bill will hit the president's desk." I'm quoting again, "That's exactly what the Republican majority is capable of, undoing access to health care for 17 million Americans." And then the pitch went on to ask supporters to donate $5 to protect Obamacare. I'm going to quote again from this one of the pitches. "Here's our plan. We're turning these attacks on Obamacare into a 24-hour fundraising surge to defeat these anti-women, anti-healthcare Republicans." So the repeal of Obamacare ended up being a big windfall for congressional Democrats. Let me say this. In the Senate, Obamacare is simmering again, and this is about the nomination of Beth Cobert. She's going to be the director of Office of Personnel Management. Remember OPM? Remember, that's the agency that got hacked by millions and millions and billions? That's the agency that's basically the HR department for the federal government. It's called Office of Personnel Management, OPM. This woman, Beth Cobert, wants to be the head of OPM. And Senator Vitter, the Republican from Louisiana, says he's going to put a hold on it. He says that he's going to put a hold on the nomination because he wants to figure out what exactly the OPM is going to do with the official rules of the official offices dealing with the federal employees' health benefits. Because remember when they passed Obamacare, they passed a provision that said that members of Congress and staff would be required to be covered under Obamacare. But OPM and the IRS just made a different ruling, made a different interpretation. This is one of the controversial aspects of the rollout, because Capitol Hill basically thought they were doing one thing And the Democrats in the White House and in the agencies did another. Under OPM rules, members of Congress designate the status of their staff positions for each year. And they basically say who is eligible for Obamacare and who is eligible for the Federal Employees Health Benefit Plan. Well, the language in the bill, according to members of Congress, according to staff that wrote it, was there wasn't supposed to be an opportunity for members of Congress to designate. It was supposed to be everybody's under Affordable Care Act. Everybody's under Obamacare. So until Beth Colbert pretty much says one way or the other how she's going to deal with that, you've got Senate Republicans saying, well, then you're not going to get the top job, lady. She's been acting director since last summer, since the resignation of the prior director dealing with, as I said, that massive cyber theft of personal information. It was millions, folks. So anyway, we'll see how that goes, but the Senate is dealing with its own kind of version of Obamacare. And then you've got also coming up in the House and the Senate, and those that have been in the House and the Senate, those that follow the House and the Senate, they know that this is the time of year where the House starts writing a budget. They start writing a budget, and right now the president's supposed to have submitted his budget to the Congress so they can use it as a blueprint. Do you want to hear how well this guy has done in submitting the president's budget? Now, first of all, the president, by law, by the Budget Impoundment Act of 1974, so by law, he has to submit his budget for the upcoming fiscal year no later than the first Monday in February. In one term, President Obama missed the budget deadline more than any other president. In 90 years, from 1923 to 2013, President Obama is the only president to miss the deadline 2 years in a row. He's the only president who's missed the deadline 3 of 4 years of his term. And he holds the record for being the most tardy, 98 days. But do we really care? His budget is usually dead on arrival when it comes to the House and comes to the Senate. It's usually got chocked full of major programs, giveaway programs. We're going to talk about a few of those anyway. So the House and the Senate, they take it, they look at it, but they don't really write their budget using it. But it's supposed to be a blueprint. Well, the House Freedom Caucus, remember there's about 40 members of the House Freedom Caucus. They need to figure out what they're going to ask the leadership when it comes to writing the budget. Meadows, who is a caucus member, said this, and I'm going to quote, "Right now, there are a number of us who are looking for ways to get a yes, and that's a pretty high bar to get to." And he means get a yes as far as vote for the budget. We want Congress to write a budget, folks. We want Congress to adopt a budget. We want Congress to then live by their budget. You know, when they write a budget resolution, it's sort of like you and I and our family sitting in our kitchen table in January, writing our budget for the year. How much are we going to pay for the cable bill, the water bill, the light bill, the rent or the mortgage or the car payment? What are we going to pay for groceries generally? And maybe we stick it on the refrigerator. I guess refrigerators don't stick anymore. So you put it somewhere and you try to follow it. Well, Congress does this, and once they pass a budget resolution, if they want to add reconciliation instructions to that budget resolution, they can do that. That's how they voted on repealing Obamacare this last time. They used the reconciliation process, but that only comes from doing a budget resolution. So the bottom line, folks, we want them to do a budget resolution. We want them to do a budget resolution. Let's flip over to some campaign stuff for a minute. Hillary Clinton said on Thursday that she is confident that the FBI's investigation into her classified email information while she was Secretary of State will not lead to an indictment. How does she know that? Do you think she knows that? I'm going to quote her here. "I am 100% confident nothing will come from the review of my email account." And Hillary Clinton told this to MSNBC's Chuck Todd during the Democratic debate last night. How does she know that? Take a listen here for just a minute. This is Speaker Ryan talking about the FBI report.
On the congressional oversight and reviews of Hillary Clinton, Chairman Chaffetz has said he has new information of going after federal records. But the FBI and Justice are already looking into this. Are you concerned that having Chaffetz, who's actively campaigning for Marco Rubio, will make this a more political probe?
We're going to respect the FBI's investigation. The FBI Director James Comey is in the middle of an investigation. They have the tools they need to do it, so we will be respecting that investigation.
Are you going to suggest that he hold back?
Okay, well, he's basically saying we're not going to get in the way. I firmly believe, and I've said this on Andrea J. King's show, that the reason Trey Gowdy did not go after Hillary in that 11 hours or 10 hours and whatever it was when he had the final or that last hearing on Benghazi, the Select Committee on Benghazi, when it met in October, to big fanfare, everybody thought, oh, Hillary's going to be at the Select Committee, and Trey Gowdy, he's a great prosecutor. He's going to eat her lunch. And he didn't. I've always thought the reason he didn't is because he learned things that the FBI needed to use for their investigation, and if he talked about them out loud, if he grilled her about them, it might taint that information, and therefore it couldn't be used. And you know what I think was really sad? Donald Trump, months or weeks later, called Trey Gowdy, I think he called him an idiot, because he didn't go after her. Either an idiot, it was something derogatory. It sort of floored me, to be perfectly honest. I'm thinking, buddy, you have no idea what he knows. You have no earthly idea what a federal prosecutor, former federal prosecutor, now House member, knows from all his investigators that are on that Benghazi Select Committee. You have no idea what they have learned, and you have no idea how they need to handle that information. So anyway, Hillary thinks that she's going to get away scot-free. Well, let me just talk about this for a second. Mark Grant from Hilltop Strategies discusses how China and us are having a slowdown, tanking oil prices, that the federal government and the Fed in general is going through some uncertainty that will likely impact world markets. He said, and he's also, this is a Citi, he's a Citi bank strategist, the global market seems to be trapped in a, quote, death spiral that could lead to further weakness in oil prices, recession, and a serious equity bad market. Isn't that a little scary? Let me just talk for a minute more about Hillary Clinton. Who gets most of their money from big banks? I'm going to give you a choice. Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, we know Donald Trump doesn't get any, Chris Christie, Bernie Sanders, or Hillary Clinton, or John Kasich. Who do you think in that list gets the most money from big donors, and they are banks? It's Hillary Clinton. She gets big money from J.P. Morgan, from Citigroup, from Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley. You know what? Do you think that this crisis, this death spiral, might affect the election? We're going to talk about that in just a second. A University of New Hampshire poll polled right after the caucus. They polled about 1,000 people of registered Democrat voters in New Hampshire, and they say that Bernie is going to beat Hillary 2-1 in New Hampshire. 2-1. That's amazing. That to me is amazing. Obviously, we'll see how it plays out. We know the primary is coming up next Tuesday. In the meantime, guess what happens Saturday night? What are we all doing Saturday night? Well, the debate Saturday night, so we'll have something to watch. If you're a political junkie, you'll have something to watch. Did you hear what Donald Trump said? He said the president maybe feels comfortable in a mosque. Remember, he visited one in the middle of the week. I believe it was Wednesday. This is what Trump said on Fox News. We have a lot of problems in this country. We have a lot of places he can go, and he chose a mosque. Maybe he feels more comfortable there. I don't know what to say about that. I'll just leave that alone. How likely is the next president after Barack Obama to be a Republican? How likely is it that the next president after Barack Obama will be a Republican? That is the new Rasmussen poll. They telephone polled, and this is what they came up with. 59% of likely U.S. voters said the next president after Barack Obama will be a Republican. 36% said that's unlikely. What do you think of the polls? Well, I can tell you after Iowa, 10 out of the 14 polls that were quoted all over the place fell outside of their confidence intervals. There's a 95% confidence intervals. That means they've got to be right almost 95%. 10 of 14 fell outside that 95%. Two of four late polls picked up the movement of Cruz and Rubio, but the others did not. Now, let's go back to Trump for a second. Remember, he's been pointing out that Ben Carson was sort of done bad, if you will, by the Cruz campaign, because the Cruz campaign told voters that the neurosurgeon was planning to drop out of the race. You can actually Google, I didn't want to play it because the quality is really bad, a voicemail message that blasted out to all 1,500 Cruz precinct workers in Iowa in the middle of the caucus that basically said, Carson is dropping out, tell everybody there he's dropping out, and encourage them to move over to the Trump campaign. Don't waste their vote. Well, Senator Cruz had to apologize, and he also has another issue. Have you heard about this voter violation mailer that came out? Well, it's based on fraud also. It's based on the Cruz campaign mailing out something that looks official. He's designed it to be official. It has your name on it. It has a couple of your neighbors. And, of course, you know your neighbors' names likely. And it has your percent of how often you voted. In other words, have you been voting 55% of the time, 65%, 75%? Nobody gets over 65%. Most of them are 65, 55%. And it grades all your neighbors. And then it says, you know, you got to get better at this, basically. Well, it's false because voter registration rolls don't keep up with how often you vote. He made it up. Here's the deal, folks. I say let Trump and Cruz fight it out. Let them fight it out. And whoever comes ahead of the game, that's the one that would rise above it. And in my view, I hope it's Marco Rubio. Remember what Marco Rubio said? He said it in the debate last time, and he said it about Ted Cruz. He said it pretty gentlemanly-like, but this is what he said. Ted, you will say or do anything to get elected. Remember the old adage? I'm sure Bob does. I say it all the time. He who defines first defines last. Well, that may just be Ted Cruz's definition. You will do anything to get elected. Well, I'm going to let you listen to the president talking about spending more of corporation money. He's talking about taxing oil companies 25% to build green transportation. But he's also announced Wednesday that he's going to start a new program where an EBT card, the food stamp program, is going to be given to kids' parents for summer food programs, and they're going to load it $45. Wonder how much that'll actually get spent on kids' food. Take a listen to this real fast. I maybe won't play the whole thing. It's a little more than 2 minutes.
With respect to oil and energy, I'll probably make a larger speech about that and the direction that we need to go on this. The basic proposition is that right now gas is $1.80, and gas prices are expected to be low for a while, for the foreseeable future. That overall can be a good thing for the economy. But what is also important is that we use this period where gas prices are low to accelerate a transition to a cleaner energy economy, because we know that's not going to last. Every one of us have seen cycles where gas prices go down and then they pop back up. And the idea here is that if we say to oil companies, which, by the way, got a significant benefit when we, in the omnibus, allowed them for the first time to export oil. Up until that point, domestic oil producers couldn't export. So if we say to them now, all right, oil companies, we know that you're having to retool. We know that prices are low right now. You're allowed to export. But what we're also saying is that we're going to provide, we're going to impose a tax on a barrel of oil, imported, exported, so that some of that revenue can be used for transportation, some of that revenue can be used for the investments in basic research and technology that's going to be needed for the energy
sources. Okay, that's code for we're taking your money. They're going to tax oil companies up to 25% to build green transportation. Remember that Citibank prediction that we just talked about? The economy's in a death spiral. Remember partly how we got Barack Obama in 2008? I believe in part because of the housing meltdown. We as Americans tend to blame those in charge when we're in this crisis, whether it's their fault or not. In that case, the Republicans, George W. Bush, it's got to be the Republicans' fault. They've been in charge. If we have a meltdown, will the American people blame the Democrats in this case? Well, I'm going to flip over again to Marco Rubio, because Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina, he's a black senator. He's soft-spoken, very accomplished. He owns an insurance agency in South Carolina. He shares a story with Dr. Carson as far as being raised by a single mom. He endorsed Marco Rubio. Listen to this. This is less than a minute.
I'm Tim Scott. It's a long way from where I grew up to the United States Senate. But here in America, all things are possible. That's why I support Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio understands that here in America, it's not about where you start, it's about where you're going. I'm Tim Scott, and Marco Rubio is the conservative I trust to inspire our country, unite our party, and win in November.
That's huge, guys. That's huge if you're in South Carolina, because Tim Scott, as I said, is their version of Dr. Carson as far as soft-spoken and very accomplished, but he's also run three times in the last handful of years. He's a very popular, well-known member of Congress. All right, get your paper, get your pencil out. This is the time for the president's daily schedule for today. At 10 o'clock, the president gets his daily briefing. At 11:30, he meets with Senator Bob Casey in the Oval Office, 11:35, that is. And at 12:30, he delivers a statement on the economy. That's it, folks. That is it. That is your president hard at work. I'm going to leave you with Marco Rubio's theme song. It's from Mercy Me. I love it. It's called Greatest. Listen to the words, folks. Really listen to the words. Have a wonderful, wonderful, blessed weekend. Ooh. I will talk to you on Monday. So stay tuned.
Ooh. Bring your tithe and bring your shame. Bring your guilt and bring your pain. Don't you know that's not your name? You will always be much more to me. And every day I wrestle with the voices that keep telling me I'm not